Jawad, They need water or something. Sure. Okay. Is it this one? Tenzila.
Hello, Ken.
Ring. Hello, Pugu Chow, the driver.
That's your race again, Pugu Kay Pugu.
Pugu Mangbundu.
No, no.
Take it away, Pugu.
No.
Yes, yeah. The seed of the Dharma, seed of the potations. So now, Majuna Gitadani, we sing it Tanji Dendo, Tojalana, Mabayanda, but Zubi Sanji, Kumborum, but Jenny Tobra Shagui, Tetobra Shavi Chedo, then be children, but you sing and be Gurum Shanji, Simji, say Simbegon is Sembri.
Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings. With that kind of altruistic motivation or bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching.
Mm-hmm. That the nigger sandwich tambourine, and Ranzo Chudre at the same the hunger, a chair to that sometimes memory. She was some pinjilla at the payak and induction, that she was some pinjins, shaman and some drum good, Tagana Yitabe Combatoyada, Dele Lape, Sanjay Combatoy, a chair do, and then a chew ying you should do you some machine, she would rest.
The importance of cultivating this kind of altruistic motivation or bodhicitta motivation is this, that we are not limiting ourselves only to this lifetime, it is interest. As a matter of fact, we're trying to go beyond that, all those, and we're thinking about how to benefit our future lives. And so in what this kind of motivation does is not only it will prevent rebirth in unfortunate states in our next life, and also not only would it, help us to free from unfortunate states, but actually go beyond samsara or cyclic existence or nirvana. This kind of motivation really is geared towards finding complete enlightened state, which is the highest spiritual goal. It is beyond, even nirvana, and find that state for the benefit of all sentient beings. So it plays a very significant role in our spiritual development. Of course, it's not just enough to cultivate such a wonderful motivation as if that's all you know we need to do. Having cultivated the altruistic motivation, then we also need to make efforts to implement it by way of doing our practice, you know, correctly and purely. So I would also like to remind ourselves that even in terms of opportunity to practice or cultivate spirituality, we have found you know, the best kind of opportunity as we compare ourselves to other types of sentient beings. As we often talk about, there are six types of sentient beings or migrators in samsara. So compared to all other types of beings in samsara, we have at the present the best opportunity and best time to cultivate spirituality within our mind. So when I say that comparatively you know, speaking or relatively speaking, we have the best kind of time and opportunity to cultivate spirituality. Now, if you want to kind of know more about it, so then we have to see, let's think about hell beings, and they are tormented by intense heat and cold, and they can't even think about, it's rather very difficult for them to think about Dharma, and there is really no opportunity, generally speaking, for them to cultivate spirituality. So we are in a much better position.
And
then when we look at predators or hungry ghosts, they are tormented by starvation, and you know they are you know tormented by you know intense hunger and thirst, and have even much difficulty to find something to eat or drink, and forget about thinking about spirituality.
No, no. That yandu signe me tene sigina ta chu me and zambilin ke membro kasidu was tinan ta chu drunken ta chu sanu khonken ta andu sin pan du ce ce jebe na ta nyuni ke bichang du was.
So even when we look within our human world, we know what's the population of human beings in this world or on this planet. But now we can see how many of us humans are really genuinely interested in cultivating spirituality. So then even compared to our fellow human beings, those who are interested in cultivating spirituality are very few, fewer in numbers. And then we think about divine beings or celestial beings. And, you know, they are so much stuck or absorbed in sensual pleasures, and often they can't think about, you know, spirituality, and they don't find the opportunity to do so. They're kind of sucked into, if you will, the sensual pleasures in the divine worlds. And then let's think about what we call asuras or demigods. And so their major problem is combating with divine beings for status and power. And oftentimes they are the ones who lose, they are the losers, and get defeated and have so much suffering and problems to deal with. And so they couldn't hardly find anybody who would teach them about spirituality.
And
when we talk about three worlds of existence or three realms of existence in samsara, there is what we call a form realm of existence. And in this, we can talk about different levels of existence, as many as 17 levels of the or the stages of form realm of existence. And we do find divine beings along these different levels, but they, you know, could hardly find really anybody who would guide them spiritually. And maybe on their own, some of them might, you know, be able to practice a little bit something, but generally speaking, really they don't find the same kind of opportunities that we do to engage in spiritual practice.
Let's
consider the divine beings in the formless realm of existence. There are four different levels within the formless realm of existence. And divine beings in this stage cannot practice spiritual, they do not find anybody teaching spirituality, because in this formless stage, one of the characteristics is there's no sound. And so it is as if they are absorbed into kind of a deep sleep. So maybe some of them on their own, that could be exceptional cases where they may be able to do some practice, but generally speaking, in the formless realm of existence, there is no sound. There is nobody teaching them dharma or about spirituality. In both the formless realm of existence and divine beings in the form realm of existence along the 17 levels of the stages, they do not experience manifest form of suffering, which basically means, you know, they do not experience suffering of misery. And also, you know, the suffering of change. But they do experience what is called pervasive suffering or extensive suffering, because they are bound within samsara, just like us. So the point I'm trying to make here is, even as we compare ourselves to this, beings in the formless realms of existence and the divine beings in the form realm of existence along the 17 stages, we have much better opportunities to cultivate spirituality, which are lacking in them.
Divine
beings or celestial beings the desire realm of existence. We talk about the six types of divine beings in the desire realm of existence. And then there are divine beings, as I said, along the 17 levels or the stages of the form realm of existence. As a matter of fact, you know, they do make earnest prayers to be able to be reborn as the human beings of the Jambudvipa, the world we live in, the southern continent, so that they will be able to pursue spirituality. So even they pray to be reborn, you know, as one of us in this world called Jambudvipa, to be able to pursue spirituality. So generally speaking, as I said, compared to all those other beings in samsara or cyclic existence, we have much better opportunities to cultivate spirituality. And even comparing to fellow human beings, as I said, just think about the world population and how many people are genuinely interested in and have opportunities to practice spirituality. The numbers are very fewer. And of course, I mean, there is a difference between finding just a human life or finding what we call precious human life that is characterized by 8 freedoms and 10 enriching factors, 18 great qualities. So we have found what we call precious human life, which is just more than being a human being. Our life is characterized by freedoms and enriching factors, which provide us opportunities and resources to be able to cultivate spirituality. Not every human being has all these opportunities. So what I'm saying is, relatively speaking, even within the community of human beings, those of us who have found this wonderful opportunity to practice Dharma, who have found what we call precious human life characterized by freedoms, 8 of them, and 10 enriching factors, are fewer in number. Now, that being said, as much as we appreciate our precious human life, but we also need to take into consideration how much time we waste and we get distracted in all the worldly things we do or activities in samsara. Well, each of us has, you know, equal time, 24 hours a day. And now we need to ask ourselves, how many hours do I, you know, find time to do my practice or to cultivate spirituality? Of course, I'm not, you know, being too, how should I say, unfair. I understand we all need to work. I mean, you need to go to work. I mean, that's a fact of life. So after working, then there are still time left. So how much of the other time that we have do we get distracted, or we just get kind of sucked into all the worldly activities and things? And so now, how much time do we have or make for ourselves to cultivate spirituality? Now, that is a very important question that each of us should ask ourselves. Out of the 24 hours, this many hours I need to work, but then these are the remaining hours left. Now, how much time I find or make myself to do practice? How much time I get wasted or get distracted? So when we really think in this line and investigate ourselves how we do, we really, I'm honestly speaking, most of the time what we find is we are simply, you know, wasting our time. We just get sucked into all the worldly activities.
강기 쨍기 시그여서 나 쳐와 마또 봐. 쳐와 마또 봐. 똑이 다 왕 쉐버스.
So now if you're wondering, okay, if I'm wasting so much time getting distracted by so many things, so what is really making me do that? Why do I get distracted? Now, one of the reasons here is because we really have not realized what is called impermanence or the truth about death and dying. Because when we really don't think about, don't have this awareness of death and dying and impermanence of life, then we just simply get distracted by so many things. So we really need to study what impermanence is, and we need to educate ourselves about it, and then we need to meditate on it. Now, in terms of doing meditation, we call GOM. We could talk about meditating on impermanence considering two things. Number one, you know, we can focus our mind on the impermanence of external environment. What do we observe? I mean, things are produced, things decay, things get destroyed, things are changing all the time in our environment, right? So things are, you know, being produced, you know, things, you know, they stay for a while, then they decay or they get deteriorated, they get destroyed, or things are changing all the time. So that is, I mean, a part of impermanence that we could think about. As a matter of fact, it is stated in Lamrim treatises that you know, changing seasons is, as a matter of fact, can be one's a great teacher of impermanence, right? seasons change. That's why we at least have four seasons. What we talk about, we can talk about winter, summer, spring, and fall. So these seasonal changes we observe could be a great teacher of impermanence to us, that, you know, how things are changing, even in terms of the weather or climates. And then we can also, use other ways to think about impermanence. Just thinking about ourselves, you know, we can go back and think about, you know, the time, you know, our moms gave birth to us. And from that, we might just go through our album, if you have album, right? Say, okay, how did we look like when we were just being delivered? And how we have changed, both physically and psychologically or mentally. That, you know, so much things have changed with regard to our body and mind, that all of us have matured or grown older. Nobody is getting younger as we age.
So that da jag to me hit to rang ka nang yes ani tambo ani dem ba gi chue sun jan ma ta ba hun sun nang yes.
Our historical teacher Shakyamuni Buddha himself, once when he gave his first teachings or the first sermons on the Four Noble Truths, the first thing he talked about was impermanence. And then also, when Buddha talked about what is called the four seals of Buddhism, in other words, what are the four characteristics of Buddhism, the four seals of Buddhism, again, Buddha talked about Dujje Thamje Midaba, everything that is produced is impermanent. Sakje Thamje Dungeba, everything that is contaminated is misery or suffering. So all phenomena, everything that exists is empty and selfless, and nirvana is the peace. So the four what are called seals of Buddhism, four imprints of Buddhism, again Buddha talked about impermanence. So talking about these four characteristics of the seals of Buddhism, Buddha, by telling us that everything that is produced or composed is impermanent, everything that is contaminated is misery, and every phenomenon that exists is empty and selfless. Then finally he said, nirvana is peace. So basically he's telling us that what we can really truly rely upon is the peace of nirvana. That's what we should be trying to find. So what we should be aiming at eventually is the nirvana. In this case, the nirvana we can talk about in terms of complete enlightened state, where we find the highest level of happiness, and it is completely free of any kind of misery and suffering. So what I just talked about is that we educate ourselves about impermanence of life and things, then we meditate on it, considering impermanence with regard to external environments, such as seasonal changes, the things get produced, the things get destroyed, and things are changing all the time. And also we can think about inhabitants within the environment, the sentient beings, we are sentient beings, how we ourselves have undergone changes. And a very big part of meditation on impermanence is the uncertainty of time of death. That is a very important point that we should reflect upon, that we really don't know when this life is going to come to an end. As far as the certainty of death is concerned, maybe generally speaking, we all human beings would agree with that. Okay, everybody who is born will die. Okay, so that means once you are born, right, once you are produced, you will die. You will be destroyed. So that everybody kind of know. Okay, roughly, I accept that. Yeah. I'm born and I'll die one day. And as great Tibetan master Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa, who is also known as Jerumbuchi, says very just simply and clearly, and Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, he said that maybe people seem to know that about the certainty of death, they are going to die one day. But what most of the people don't know is when they are going to die. The time of death is uncertain. And that's what most people have not realized yet. And this is what we are talking about. We may generally agree, consent to the statement that, yes, I have been born and I will die. So everybody who is going to be born will die one day. But we really don't know when will we die. The time of death is uncertain and we haven't realized that yet. So we could ask, like, okay, if I agree that I'm already born and I'm going to die one day, so then why do I get distracted so much again? Well, the reason we get distracted so much is because we are, you know, we don't know when we are going to die. The time of death is uncertain. I mean, we could, let's say, imagine that we are going to die tomorrow for sure, but we don't know that. So today we are making a grand plan, you know, not only for the whole day and the week and the month, but for many, many years, as if we are going to live forever. But the fact of the matter is, tomorrow we are going to die, and we don't know that. See, and then we get distracted by our planning and, you know, executing the plan. So let's say that we fix the time of our death. Tomorrow we are going to die. But the problem is we don't know that yet. So today we are as busy as ever, that, you know, out of attachment to the dear and near ones. So we do everything to kind of, we feel like we are doing for them and to protect them and save them. And then, you know, those people or beings we see as our enemies, we do everything to make their life miserable, to fight them, to defeat them. So today we are so busy out of attachment and anger, getting involved in all the activities to, you know, cherish our loved ones and, you know, protect them, and to hate and dislike and kill and destroy the enemies. But the fact of the matter is, not much time is left. Tomorrow we are going to die.
So that the healing of Tamba Kanan the Washington, the healing of the Kadambi Gishi, Lan Tamba. Chow Matabaji Shoki and then go Sassan Isigwechi, Lus Gombi in the Tininga Gazonte, Yapoy Gazote, Yambu Yalam the Dogreskan.
As great Kadamba Geshe Langri Thangba, in the footnote, the author of Eight Verses Mind Training said, right in the morning when we get up and we really meditate very effectively on impermanence, death and dying, and the time of the uncertainty of the time of death in the morning, as if it really gives us some feeling that we really started to get a little bit scared, or it jerks us, like we meditate in the morning, that the impact of that meditation is so much that it will carry on during the daytime. So we will, how should I say, think about death, being aware of death, and we will conduct ourselves differently, how we do things.
No, Alas. I think I'm doing about the time, but I'm going to need church and go to center the Matabashi. But don't go to the Mataba Gomna Tishi. Taman Drebu, Sanjay Kompa Toyatayani, Mataba Gomnita, Dushebeina, and it's only 11 of which some 2 years. Sonsa, and it's Lam Nuata, and it's Sanjay Kompa Toyatan Yerndu.
So realizing impermanence is a very crucial thing. From the start of our practice, all in the middle, all the way to the completion of the practice. If right from the beginning we really realize, understand what impermanence is and meditate on it, it becomes a great motivator for us to stay on track, which is to say, stay on the path and cultivate our spirituality. And in the middle, that awareness of the death, it helps us to maintain, persist in our own practice. And that awareness of the death at end would help us to see the fruition of our practice. So it really is very important in the middle, in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. And with that kind of awareness of impermanence, death and dying, then we find ourselves enthusiastically engaging in practice, and we don't have time to waste.
Yes. No, that is around some of the Joe Matapa, Namching, but the Samung around Samalog, Tang, Tang Tubishang, Tangurista.
So we all really need to how should I say, focus on understanding
myself.
Impermanence of life, as well as especially the uncertainty of the time of death. All of us should try to pay attention to that and try to really think about that, because that becomes a great, it can impact our life very positively, and is a great motivator. And with that, I'm going to let's return to where we left off in this wonderful text called Miscellaneous Collection of Kadapa Geshe's Personal Advices. This wonderful text is called Kadam Sung Thurbo in Tibetan, but of course I have to use so many words to translate into English. It's called A Miscellaneous Collection of Kadapa Geshe's Personal Advices. That's a whole mouthful there. And what really this contains is that oftentimes other Kadapa Geshe's have asked great Atisha, you know, some questions, and they received his answers, the responses to the questions. Or they asked great Dhomtenpa, Atisha's main disciple, number of questions, and then received answers from him. Or that they asked other Kadapa Geshe's, you know, for their personal advices. And so it is a wonderful collection of Kadapa Geshe's personal advices. A lot of this is to do with what called Q&As.
So this is your thing. Tandri, you see, Pujon of the Chenis, Deva Tembi Dewawe, Deva Pambi Dewa, Dewa Deceptious. Tandri, Deva Tembi Dewa is a tapena, Maranzo, you think Dewa says, say him, but you need to tell it in Dewan Junata, Quetta, Satan, Quetta, Satan, Longshirta, Antahana, you draw at that, that the negator, Zoo, that religion, the pain thing I heard. Tenzola tembi dewa tele ani ani thabe dewa te ani hidakta des chegres jangi tongju ke te des chegres kanani.
I'll recapitulate this point we talked about before, and this comes from great Geshe Puchungwa, and he said that the happiness of letting go attachment to sensual pleasures is, as a matter of fact, much better than the happiness we seek from sensual objects. What this really basically means is that we, as ordinary people and sentient beings, we are trying to find happiness by indulging in sensual pleasures and objects, right? We try to eat good food, so that makes us happy. We buy, you know, nice clothes that we would like to wear, so we think that makes us happy. Or we try to find friends and companionships, so we think, okay, that will make us happy. So as a matter of fact, there are five sensual objects, you know, forms, sound, smell, taste, and touch. So through these five sensual, you know, what we call objects, we try to find some happiness. But what the Geshe Puchungwa is telling us is that we can find a much better happiness, you know, by way of letting go these sensual objects. And the happiness that we find in nirvana or even enlightenment is a very stable and everlasting and much, much better, 100,000 times better than the happiness we seek from sensual objects.
Mm-hmm. Zula chabi chabi wang ne ta zu na so ba thong chen de la tembi tembi ta ne ke de wa ji yong ge wa shi de shi a ta nga na yi ge zhan yin bo ta zhan yin bo ta de le cha ne de la ji la chabi chabi wang ge ta de le nie ne ne ya ne ke shi de wan de chim tembi yong ge wa shi ta ta ga na yo ro ta a de zu da de 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 la ne de le chabi chaba dang pen de de shi bo de de ta de le na lu xie bi na Gula so the Gurvina, Tatelitan, Telatimbi Devachi, Timbi, the Jack Wonky, Chubby Devachi Ungurvas, Tatagana, you rose, Tanda said at Zurita, Rija Nit, Quella Sopata, and Tagana Y Rizata, Nid, Tagana Y Re, Tripe Devala Chubby, Chaba, Tanzushi, and Chubby, Tripe Devala Chubby Chaba, Tanzu, and the Chachi Wonky, Pena Yumabu. You remember the Shumwe, that Devachi Dosin Chagur. Just that Tele and Yomo Pambi Devachi Shumbina. At that day, pay attention to David Devachi Chagres. And the subchase here at the Karazana, Hidaka Del Hapachita, Yungres Kanunwa.
And I think we talked about this before that what we find ourselves or most of the beings doing is that. You know, we are seeking happiness, from sensual objects. That we go in search of what call attractive and beautiful forms. And so then through our interaction with them, of seeing them, then we derive some temporary happiness or pleasures, right? If we see beautiful things temporarily, that makes us happy, our day. Or that we are... I'm attached to, beautiful sound. But that's why we find ourselves listening to, very pleasant sounds that makes us happy, whether it's a music, it's a human voice, or whatever the case may be. So we get some temporary happiness. Or that we are attached to good smells. That's why we throw perfume on our clothes. And because anything that smells good makes us temporarily happy. Or that, we, as I just mentioned earlier, attached to food, good taste, right? That's why we would love to eat good food and anything that is, delicious to eat, that brings us temporary happiness. Or that we are very much attached to touch. The touch could be that we would like to wear, very fine clothes on our body, and that really gives us certain pleasure and happiness, the fine clothes or attire. Or that we go into very intimate, sexual intimacy, and that, gives us certain temporary pleasure and happiness. So this is what we are really caught up with. But basically, the happiness that we are seeking through all these sensual objects is out of delusions, out of attachment, and things like that. And what Geshe Pujova is telling us is that if we let go our delusions, such as attachment to these sensual objects and pleasures, we can find much, much better happiness, qualitatively speaking. So that's what we should really should be seeking, Lonskin.
Ta tenzo deba pangbi deva deba pangbi deva te ani nema tenzo le janju tongju ge ta pe ani laba chi tangaran sol ta deva chi nyi gres.
So the point he's trying to make is that we, as sentient beings, are so much caught up with sensual pleasures and happiness, and we get entangled with delusions. But anyway, what we really experience is very temporary. But if we abandon our delusions or let go our delusions and try to find the happiness, that happiness of nirvana and enlightenment is very firm, it's very lasting, it's, in terms of quality, it's exponentially and like million trillion times better than the happiness we get from sensual objects.
Kasing des kan des tanda mendu dina kasing ema song songas tripe dewa ta nich dewa tanzo pe tanzo le pe ta kasing dewa chik ta neka dewa chik yungu tanzo le chak chamo shigur was ta tanzo pang me na tele chal desu shigur ka.
And I think, we did talk about this before, that, some of the things we are really caught up with is some kind of comfort or happiness or pleasure we seek from, taking a nap or like sleeping or from a sexual intimacy. And we think, oh, that's what really makes us happy. But that, you know, kind of pleasure, the happiness we seek is, again, contaminated by delusions. But if we really, there is much better happiness, in other words, that we could attain by letting go delusions and not getting so much caught up with sensual objects. So the bottom line is that, you know, we should know that the happiness we are seeking through sensual objects and pleasures is actually just a temporary happiness. That's really not a real happiness to begin with. It's very temporary. But there is what we call everlasting happiness beyond all the sensual pleasures and objects, and that's what we should be, you know, seeking. And another important point that Geshe Pujabo makes is that it's better to understand you know, one meaning or a concept rather than knowing too many words. You know, we may know so many words of expression or words, but we may not understand any, you know, meanings of what they say. So it's better to have one meaning, understanding the meaning, rather than knowing too many words. I think that is a really big advice for us, especially at this time, where, you know, many of us get so much caught up with learning the words and the terms and expressions, and we get so much caught up with, you know, having a lot of things to talk about, but really don't know anything much. So we really don't pay much attention to understanding the real meaning of the words, but we caught up with learning the, you know, proper jargons and the terms and the terminologies and the words of expressions and, you know, how to say things beautifully and so all that. So this is a great advice for us. Now, another point, third point that Geshe Pujabo makes is that there are many ways to benefit sentient beings. I mean, we can benefit them through material resources, or we can benefit them through spirituality. So again here, because we can benefit others through material gifts and through spiritual gift, I mean, making a spiritual gift or benefiting someone spiritually will bring them much more benefits than through the material gifts. You know, we can be very generous in making material gifts and resources available to others, which is really benefiting them, but much more beneficial than that or those things is to benefit others spiritually. But we must not misunderstand what Geshe Pujabo was saying. He is not saying, and we are not saying that, oh, there is no benefit to making generous gifts of material things. We accept that, I mean, benefiting others materially is beneficial. There is benefit to it. But what is more beneficial is through spiritual gift. So we are really not undermining the importance and the benefits of material gifts or generosity, but we are saying, given the choices of benefiting others through material gifts and spiritual gifts, the spiritual gift will go much further and benefit others much more. So now I think it's important for us to figure out and how or what's the reason that spiritual gift would be more beneficial to others. Do you know what reasons?
Since Dungil tan sambi samba dewan de ne dewa ki shuna sambi samba ki yores.
You know, I think every sentient being wants to be free from misery and suffering. I mean, that is, in some sense, very natural to every sentient being that we seek, you know, freedom from suffering, and we are seeking happiness that is free of suffering.
Setabati dunghe kunzu nyombi dunghe te thagu marwas. Pena tekum tepe dunghe ta nikagwe, ane kombi dunghe che setugure te thadu.
So when we are very generous and we treat others, you know, with food and drinks that they need, you know, somebody who's hungry, somebody who's very thirsty, okay, we give them food and drink. Well, that helps them, you know, to temporarily, you know, okay, to get over their suffering of hunger and thirst. That's about it. But still they have suffering. So it's a very partial answer. So temporarily, you know, their needs are satisfied. Now they are not hungry, they are not thirsty. But that does not mean, you know, we have ended their suffering.
But
on the other hand, if we make a spiritual gift, you know, then you see, the other people, or they understand what it is, and that they put it into practice. Now we have given them the method or the means with which they themselves can, you know, help them utmostly. In other words, they can free themselves from the state of suffering for good. So we have provided them the ways, the means to do that.
So that church jimba tanga.
So it is through spiritual gifts, two things are happening, that we provide them the means with which they can end their suffering, and they can also find everlasting happiness of nirvana or enlightenment. So therefore, I mean, they're getting the two great benefits out of this gift.
And
when we make spiritual gifts, as great Indian Buddhist realized master Acharya Vasubandhu has stated in his Treasury of Knowledge or Abhidhamma Kosha, Kishala quoted the stanza from his memory, he said, when we make gifts, especially spiritual gifts, we should do so, you see, without deluded states of mind. In other words, we should not make a spiritual gift, you know, with some kind of ulterior motives that, okay, maybe they will think I'm a very learned, or that I'm going to be famous someday, or that, you know. So, no, you see, those are deluded motivations. So we should give spiritual gifts out of pure, undiluted motivations.
Okay,
so we will stop there 10 minutes early today because many of you have taken one day Mayana precepts this morning, and so we give you time to at least start your lunch before
12.
And I would encourage people to take one day Mayana precepts, you know, as often as you could. That's very wonderful. I mean, you could take on your own. I mean, the footnote, I'm saying it. Or you can come and take together. Because this kind of one day Mayana precept is a very powerful practice that both monks and nuns and lay people can do.
So, that the pain came to which I got it, and Sanjay Kayugu, and
Because of really very degenerated time that we are passing through, somebody who lived during the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, I mean, who observed, let's say, vows and celibacy for the whole life, of course, he or she accumulated tremendous benefits, no doubt about that. But compared to that, you know, sort of a golden time, but today, when we are going through very degenerated time and other degenerations, you know, rampantly happening, if someone, you know, takes vows and keeps them very purely, such as the Mahayana vows, which is only for one day, or like, you know, practice vows for, like, say, 1 week or 10 days, I think the benefits are, you know, if not more, but equal to someone who observed the vows for whole life during Buddha's time. So it's very, I mean, a very beneficial practice to do. Of course, then even this degenerate time, those of us who have taken monastic ordination as monks and nuns, so we have promised to keep these vows until we die. So that means, you know, when we observe our vows every day, there's so much benefit coming out of it. And that compared to the lay people, of course, you know, we should be accumulating much more merits by observing our vows every day, and we decided to do that until we die. Now, the lay people have not taken the monastic ordination, so they may decide to take one day Mahayana precept, but doing that, they also accumulate tremendous merit. I mean, relatively speaking, as I just gave the example, compared to observing vows, I mean, throughout the life during Buddha's time. So with that, I have two prayer requests for Jingme Shakdor, who is going through health issues, and Chen Wei Yu also has health issues. So prayers are requested for them to recover from their sicknesses quickly.
Of course, we got only two names here who
are dealing with health issues, but Gisela would like to remind all of us that we should think about many others who are dealing with health issues, not only in our world, but in other world systems. Many, not just the human beings, but other sentient beings. So we think about all of them and sincerely wish them to recover from their sicknesses quickly and then develop interest in cultivating positive thoughts and actions, which is basically to do with spirituality and pursue spirituality and, you know, free themselves from the state of suffering. And we dedicate our merit for them to be able to find a refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and under their care and guidance, be able to pursue their spirituality and free themselves from the state of suffering.
Omane pemi
ngaranzo tenin chue chin shebe gewe zawa la teni sanji tenpa rumba ki taji yinu zi nepa ta jawa yinu abe zuebe tenzi shebe tamba nanshi kusi yabe tenpa ta tuji yinu tata meme lundu yunga ta chue dungi ki an shao poma namshi kyunti ji shawa nam yitzan tundru pa ta ane njiti ji kam dita yendo minti bi gusu tata yene tunji yinu zu tata meme lundu yunga ta
Let us dedicate our collective merit for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great spiritual masters live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our merits for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from deluded states of mind, obstructing them from finding nirvana and mental obscuration to omniscient state, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly.
Sim, Joe, Rainbow, Jay, Maja, Bono, Shay, Joe, Jay, Shabana, Bama, Mepavata, Kone, Kondo, Pay, Water, Shaw, Tony, Tower, Rainbow, Jay, Maja, Bono, Shay, Joe, Jay, Shabana, Bama, Mepavata, Kone, Kondo, Pay, Water, Shaw, Kangra, Rabbit, Gurve, Jim, Kamatri, Pandavan, Dewa, Malu, Joe, Nay,
Nice.